This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto. Burger King under fire for its fake meat burger. Does it really have no meat in it? Also, we're going to see Personal Finance Wednesday, some year-end money tasks that all of us should consider as 2019 gets ready to close. Right now, though, the CEO of Walmart is noting a negative aspect of delivery, and Amazon making noise about improvements to its Ring doorbell. To talk about these things, we're joined by Shelley Palmer, host of the Think About This podcast with Shelley Palmer and Ross Martin. You can visit him at thinkaboutthis.fm, also on Twitter at thinkaboutthis. Shelley, let's begin with Walmart. Obviously, home delivery by a lot of these companies becoming a huge deal. People want you to bring it right to the house and even set it inside. Walmart, though, its CEO saying there may be a problem with that.
Well, the problem is dogs. People have dogs. Dogs are awesome, especially if they're yours. Dog people know that super secret of the universe is that dogs are awesome. Delivery people know that dogs are dangerous. So it's a big problem for Walmart when you go to put something inside of somebody's house and they have a dog. Talk to the Postal Service. They know this for years, by the way.
Well, the difference is the post office isn't bringing it right into the house, right? It seems like that ratchets it up a little bit.
It does ratchet it up. By the way, Amazon Key and Walmart, of course, had to answer Amazon Key, is a fantastic service. Originally, what Amazon was doing is they'd say, hey, give us the keys to your car, give us the keys to your house. So, like, you could be at work, order something from Amazon, same-day delivery. They'd put it in the trunk of your car, like cases of water or big, heavy bags of pet food. So Walmart, of course, had to answer that. Amazon Key goes, lets you go into the house and set something inside the vestibule. They do that with their Ring doorbells and the Amazon Key. So Walmart had to answer. And what Walmart figured out is, wait, there are dogs in these houses. So, yeah, it's become a problem.
Yeah, it's a challenge. I mean, what can they do about it? It's not like they can guarantee that people are going to have their dogs put away somewhere, especially during the day where they're not home. They like to have the dogs run free during the day.
They do. So at the end, look, the way they're handling this is, of course, the way you think they'd handle it, which is they're asking flat out, do you have a dog? And then they're limiting the risk to the people who are doing the deliveries. This is fraught with perils because not everyone is going to, A, do the right thing with their dog, and or B, you could just make a mistake and not kennel your dog or not have the dog in the doggy cage at that time. So look, you know, we're getting into new ground and new territory now. Americans love to pay for convenience, and there's an incredible race to give you the highest level of convenience. Press a button, get something. We're in the on-demand economy. That's not going to stop. And so businesses are just going to have to adapt, and Walmart's just noticed that this is not exactly a trivial problem. There are a lot of dogs in America. People love them. I love dogs. You probably do too. Problem is, the dog doesn't know you. Even the most passive dog gets very protective. And so Walmart will figure it out. We're in a time when the on-demand economy is really, really challenging us.
Yeah, and it's not like you can sit there and negotiate with the dog. No, really, I'm just here to drop off a package. That's
right.
All I'm here for. All right, Shelley, always good to have you on. We're going to have you back to talk about Amazon and its Ring and facial recognition software with these cameras that are on more and more houses every day. Obviously, some privacy concerns there. We'll have you back to talk about that. Shelley Palmer, host of the Think About This podcast. You can find him on Twitter at Think About This. Coming up, we will have the minutes of the latest meeting of the Fed. What's going to happen with interest rates? That is coming up in just moments. The minutes of the latest meeting of the Fed due out next hour. While a slowdown in China's economy could impact trade talks with the U.S., to talk about it, we're joined by Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg, based in New York. Carl, let's begin with the Fed meeting minutes. We'll get those a little more than a half an hour from now. What is expected? What are economists expecting to see in those minutes?
Well, these were the minutes of the last meeting where they did cut rates by a quarter of a percentage point. So that brings the total to 0.75 percentage point of rate cuts since July of this year. And the minutes of those meetings are likely to reflect the expectation that policymakers think that 3 is a charm, and really the Fed doesn't have more work to do. Now, when just looking back to those numbers you just quoted on equity market performance, that augurs for a week weaker performance in the economy and the expectation that maybe the Fed will have to provide a little bit more assistance. But the Fed is trying to signal to market participants they're not going to get a rate cut at every meeting, and they're trying to execute a pause at the December Fed decision. But it's yet to be seen if the economic data will hold up sufficiently for them to be able to actually pause.
Yeah, and from there, what do you get about what the Fed is thinking about the economy? It would seem like if they were signaling way more rate cuts coming, that would be a sign that the Fed's a little worried.
Absolutely. So we've heard from the Fed since the time of that meeting and the post-meeting press conference and congressional testimony and some other public events. And the common language has been a material reassessment of economic conditions would be required for the Fed to continue easing. So they acknowledge the economy has softened this year. However, they also acknowledge that they have taken actions to counteract that softening. They think they've done enough. So that material reassessment of conditions would be something like consumer spending belly flopping in the holiday shopping season, and then the Fed having to come provide a little bit more support. But that's kind of the operative language at the moment.
Let's talk about the Chinese economy. It's obviously in an economic slowdown. Any belief that that may impact these trade talks?
Absolutely. That puts a greater urgency on Chinese trade negotiators to reach a conclusion. And that's why China has been pushing for a larger agreement, while the U.S. has been of the view that this phase one agreement would be something much smaller, relegated to some agricultural purchases and whatnot. Now, with economies slowing both in China and in the U.S., there is greater pressure to reach a deal. But at the current point in time, the U.S. economy is kind of muddling through. Whereas China is having some of the slowest growth they've seen in three decades, and they're starting to become a little bit more concerned about what the 2020 outlook is going to be.
And the question there then, I guess, is just are they willing to deal with the slowdown longer than we might be willing to deal with a stubborn economy here in the United States, right? I mean, it really does come down to just the people, right?
Right. So there is definitely some local politics involved on both sides. And certainly President Trump would like to be campaigning for reelection on the strongest economy possible. Part of the reason why he's been putting so much pressure on the Fed chair to continue lowering interest rates. But nonetheless, China really does have a problem here. There's some credit problems in the banking system with a few small lenders having to be turned over to state control. So there really is a lot of pressure that they can't wait too long. And really, at the crux of the matter is China sends about $500 billion worth of product to the U.S. every year. Absent that customer, there's really a difficult time for them to find someone else to consume that much product. So they really do have a lot of pressure to reach some sort of resolution.
Thanks so much for the analysis. Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist for Bloomberg, based in New York. Just ahead, Burger King's Impossible Whopper is now at the center of a lawsuit.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A vegan is suing Burger King because its plant-based Impossible Whopper is cooked on the same grill as beef burgers. Let's discuss the lawsuit and the status of plant-based products. Phil Lempert is joining us, founder of SupermarketGuru.com, based in Los Angeles. Phil, I may be wrong about this, but I'm going to give you credit anyway. I'm pretty sure we talked about this months ago, and you predicted that something like this might happen because Burger King, what's going on? They're cooking it on the same grills?
Yeah, Cisco, you're 100% right. If you remember, as soon as Impossible Whopper came out, I visited a couple Burger Kings. I walked over to the manager, and I said, how are you cooking this? He said, we're cooking it on the same grill. And that's when, frankly, I thought that there'd be pickets outside of every Burger King. And keep in mind, it's being cooked on the same grill for a bunch of reasons. Number one, the back rooms of any of these fast food operations are already jammed full of equipment. Number two, it's the franchisees that then have to buy that equipment. And franchisees, and McDonald's has had this as a problem for years, really don't want to spend money to buy new equipment. So they didn't have a choice, but the problem is that they didn't disclose it. And this plaintiff, Philip Williams, who lives in Georgia, you know, is a confirmed vegan. And once he found out about it, he filed this class action suit against Burger King. Burger King has really not responded yet. But at the same time, there's been other consumer groups. For example, the Consumer Freedom Group, who's been running ads for the past few months talking about the ingredients that are in these products, whether it's Impossible Foods or Beyond Meat, that people who typically want to be vegan want to stay away from ultra-processed foods. And then we saw the CEO of Whole Foods come out against these, and he's a vegan too, because of all the ultra-processed ingredients that are in them. So I think that the novelty has passed. I think that a lot of people went to Burger King to try out the Impossible Whopper, and frankly, they haven't come back.
And it just goes to show you, and I mean, this has been talked about a while too, the Beyond Meat, I mean, yeah, okay, so maybe there's no meat in it, but there's a lot of other things in there. And for health-conscious people, they at least need to be aware of that.
Exactly. I mean, they've got artificial ingredients like methyl cellulose, titanium dioxide, tertiary, and I can't even pronounce the other word, disodium insulate. I mean, you've got a lot of these ingredients that people who are trying to eat healthy or plant-based, you know, want to avoid. And there's no question that plant-based diets are on the rise. We're seeing more plant-based products than ever before. My recommendation to consumers is just head, you know, to Jewel or Dominic's and just go into the produce department and buy more plants, buy more fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, titanium dioxide, some of those things you describe, it sounds like a what's in like a fake joint, you know, and a knee replacement or something like that.
Exactly. You're right. And for a lot of people, it's a disconnect. And also, and I don't have the specifics in front of me, but a few days ago, I saw that a lot of the Beyond Meat founders have actually, they've passed the period of time where they can sell stock and not affect anything. And a lot of them have sold some of their stock. So, you know, do we see something happening on the horizon? I don't know. But plant-based food diets on the rise, some of these type of products, I think they're going to be on the decline.
Yeah, always good insight. Thank you. Phil Lempert, founder of SupermarketGuru.com.
News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Target and Lowe's issue quarterly reports, with one of the retailers hitting a home run. As the end of the year approaches, it's a great time to put your money house in order. We'll get some help in Personal Finance Wednesday. Actor Jussie Smollett files a malicious prosecution counterclaim against the city of Chicago. President Trump insists he wanted nothing from Ukraine and declares the impeachment hearings should end. On Wall Street, the Dow down 240 points. The NASDAQ is down 91. And the S&P is down 27 points. Oil today is up right about 3%. We have clouds in Chicagoland, a little bit of sunshine here and there as we head to a high of 46 degrees. Right now, 44 at O'Hare and Midway, 43 degrees along Chicago's lakefront. Tomorrow, we'll be up in the mid to upper 50s. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are in the red today. To talk about it, we're joined by Steve Esposito, Executive Director of Morgan Stanley Wealth Management in Lake Forest. Steve, interested in what you think is going on here. Markets, the Dow specifically, down about 80 throughout much of the day. And then the last hour, it's really gone south.
Well, yeah. Hi. Thank you for having me. Well, the drop in the last 20 minutes has to do with a report that the first phase of the China trade deal may not happen until next year. There's talk about rumors, take it for what it's worth, that they're not agreeing, they're hitting a snag. So that's enough to hit the algos, the algo computerized trading, and bring this market down hard relatively quickly. So it's all based on rumor.
Now, for the most part, I mean, is anyone really expecting even phase one to happen anytime soon? I mean, every day it's sort of this back and forth roller coaster.
I know, it's aggravating, isn't it? I mean, every day you get another announcement, another rumor. I saw one the other day where they said, here it is, but we haven't verified it, you know, one of the news services. So I think we're all tired of it, this back and forth. And you got to look at the big picture. The U.S. economy is in fantastic shape. No matter how you look at it, the economies that aren't doing so well right now is Europe, and China's having some issues. So, you know, we're doing great. But this fear of the future continues to dominate depending on the day, as you said. So each day's good, one day's bad. You had some really good retail numbers today. The other day, you had numbers that were below expectations. So this back and forth, I think, is really getting tiresome. I think you need to take several steps back and look at the big picture and look at what you're paying for companies, look at your investment alternatives, and you'll find that the market is kind of creating a great buying opportunity for those people looking.
Is there a fear, though, that even though we're doing fine, if all those other countries continue to struggle, we won't be doing fine for long?
Of course there is, but that's been going on for how long now? We've heard about the trade war. We've been told for the last year there's a recession coming, and yet there's no sign of a recession. Now they're talking maybe 2021, but if you remember last time, this year was the worst quarter we've had in decades. It was the worst December since 1948, based on the premise a recession was absolutely going to happen in 2019. Didn't happen. And it's not looking for the first quarter either, 2020. So it's, you know, there's enough rumors out there, and there's just too much noise. And so, people need to take steps back and focus on the fundamentals.
I mean, what that seems to point out is, you know, any more than about 3 to 6 months out, you're really kind of rolling the dice if you try to make any predictions.
Yeah, it's correct. I mean, there's too many people with microphones, I guess, whatever reason they have to do it. And you're seeing the scenario where if you yell fire in a crowded theater, you can create a panic. And we've been hearing this for over a year now, yet it hasn't happened. So looking forward, of course, it's possible. Maybe a deal will or will not happen. But despite the fear, the economy's done well. Imagine if these fears weren't out there, what the economy and the market would be doing. Imagine if there was a tailwind instead of a 300-mile headwind in the rumor world. So I don't know. To me, it looks like something will get done at some point. Europe is talking about fiscal stimulus the first time in 11 years. I think if they do that, that's a game changer. They need to stimulate. $17 trillion in negative debt is ridiculous all over the world. So, but bottom line is, where are investors going to go for the long term to get a rate of return for retirement? And let's face it, interest rates aren't there, and bonds aren't paying the yield. So there's some still good-looking, high-dividend-paying companies at very low-priced-earnings ratios. And the real good news is value is starting to come back with a vengeance. And I think that hopefully is something people should pay attention to.
Okay, so to the person who's listening here, and they say, okay, Steve, you say we're doing all right, that's good. And you know, you say that we need to essentially get back to looking at the fundamentals. How do you advise them to move forward? Maybe certain sectors that maybe are appealing, given what's going on?
Well, you know, a lot of these, you know, hype and hope stocks that have come down hard, they're trading up there, sucking all the oxygen out of the rest of the market. You know, growth at any price was leading. You didn't have to make money. You just had to have revenue growth, which, of course, is ridiculous. The companies that are out there in the single digits, many an analyst out there is talking how value is at the cheapest level in history. That's pretty far back. So look for some really good dividends you can get out there. I'm not necessarily talking maybe the utilities. I'm not referring to there. But I'm saying in general, in the healthcare sector, those are gaining some bids there. If you look at the energy, it's just been decimated despite being the biggest producer of energy in the world. Energy stocks are 10, 20-year lows, many of them. And the financial sector, if you think rates are where they're at, are they going to go up a little bit? So I would look when these days like this give you an opportunity to buy some companies you're hoping to buy, but I would really look at the value area with good dividends, low P ratios, low price to book, and put some of those away.
Well, and the good dividends, I mean, then even if the stock price ends up being a little rocky, at least you know, as long as it seems like the company is going to be able to keep paying that out, then you're going to be okay. You're going to get some income.
Right. I mean, some of the dividends you're getting now are triple and quadruple. The two-year treasury, double the 10-year, triple the 10-year. So when you get those kind of returns, that's pretty good if you can sit here waiting. And if you're sitting at a multiple of 8 on your stock and the general market's at 18 times earnings, I think that's something you need to look for the long term and just focus on, because you don't have a lot of alternatives right now out there. They're simply not there.
Always appreciate your analysis. Steve Esposito, Executive Director of Morgan Stanley Wealth Management in Lake Forest, joining us. Up next, it's Personal Finance Wednesday, wrapping up loose ends before the end of the year.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we're tackling some of the money-related tasks that you need to complete before the calendar year turns to 2020. We welcome Mark Horner, Wealth Advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management in Wheaton. Mark, right off the bat, if you said here is one thing that everyone absolutely needs to do before the end of the year as they think about the beginning of a new year, what would be tops on your list?
I'd say the number one item, Cisco, is to just make sure that you don't leave any money on the table in those company retirement plans. And so if your company offers a match for any contributions that you're putting into the plan, please make sure that you've put enough money into that plan to get that match. You're just effectively turning down a raise or free money. So it's worth getting onto the website and just making sure that you're not leaving that money on the table.
Yeah, like you say, I mean, literally, it's free money just waiting for you to take.
It is. And, you know, related to that, while we're talking about benefit plans, flexible savings accounts, so FSAs. These plans vary from company to company, but some of them do have a use it or lose it feature. So that's another one where if you've been contributing to a flexible savings account plan, you want to make sure that you understand what the deadline is to claim the use of the money that you've been saving, because you could end up forfeiting it. And so that could be money also that's flowing out of your pocket that doesn't have to.
Maybe people still confused by the changes in the tax cut bill, especially in regard to charities and local tax deductions and all of that stuff. Something to look at.
Yeah, so that's a great point. The tax law changes that went into place a couple of years ago doubled the standard deduction and also capped the SALT taxes, state and local taxes. So without getting into the weeds, what that means is you might not get the financial bang for the buck with charitable contributions, and so you might want to consider a different strategy that where you bunch your charitable contributions. And so again, that's just worth a conversation before the year is out, before you write checks to charity. That's worth a conversation with either your tax advisor or your financial advisor or both.
So by bunching them, you mean sort of pack them all into one tax year?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And so we've talked about the power of a donor-advised fund, which is a charitable giving vehicle that's just increasingly very popular. Those can make even more sense with these changes in the tax laws, where as you describe it, you bunch those charitable contributions into one year, preferably in a higher income year, where you might be able to get more tax bang for your buck for those contributions.
A lot of people thinking about those 529 savings plans and when to take the money out and when to hang on to it. Any advice on that?
Yeah, so that's another one. So when tuition bills start rolling out for January, the colleges will sometimes send those in the current tax year. You might, by writing that check, taking the distribution from the 529 plan this year for a bill that's not due until next year, you might end up making that distribution classified as non-qualified, which means it could be subject to income taxes and a penalty. So you just want to be careful that you're matching your distributions out of your 529 plan in the year in which the expenses are actually incurred. And then I can't resist reinforcing that if your student is going to be in college next fall, this is also the time of the year that college acceptance letters roll in. That first letter that comes from colleges and universities offering financial aid is frequently not their best offer. So don't get intimidated by the Ivy walls. Go ahead and negotiate those college tuition costs down.
If only I had known that when I was in school. Would have paid so much less. All right, Mark, always good insight. Thanks, man, for being with us. Mark Horner, wealth advisor at Fairhaven Wealth Management. You can find him online at fairhavenwealth.com. He's joining us on Personal Finance Wednesday. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday. Still to come, how Lowe's and Target fared in the most recent quarter.
The best daily deal in Chicago, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Shares of both Target and Lowe's are rising today. Third quarter reports have been issued. We're joined by Joe Feldman, senior retail analyst at Telsey Advisory Group in New York. Joe, I'm particularly interested in Target here because we just keep getting told retail's dead, retail's dead, retail's dead, and yet Target seems to be doing okay.
Yeah, Target's been executing quite well. They've, implemented a big transformation initiative a couple of years ago where they overhauled their merchandising and the look of the stores and with some remodels and their supply chain and the digital operation, and it's all coming together this year. And they're executing quite well and set up for a good holiday season.
So, yeah, with the holiday season, it seems like that can only get better here, as a lot of money is going to be spent over the next couple of months.
That's right. Yeah, the consumer is out there spending. I mean, we're seeing it at the discount and value end of the spectrum, where like Walmart, Target, and others like that, the off-pricers, are doing quite well. And we think Walmart, Target are among the two of the best positioned in retail right now for the holiday period.
So let's talk about Lowe's. Lowe's shares are also rising today.
Yeah, Lowe's did a good job, you know, in terms of improving their operations. And that's been a big focus for investors, is to see them, the company, improve its operations, both in the stores and the supply chain. And there's a lot of room for them to make that improvement to drive greater profitability. And that's what we saw this quarter, was some of that. And we expect that going forward as well.
Seems like it's a bigger challenge for Lowe's, and Home Depot had a good report too. It seems like it's a challenge because there's these outside conditions that really affect them. I mean, are people buying houses? Are they doing things in houses? Those are sort of outside of their control.
Well, that's right. And even, you know, closer to home, the lumber prices, you know, have been deflationary, and that's had an impact. But, you know, our concern has been that their macro environment has slowed down a little bit. Housing has been a little mixed. And it does feel like, as far as sales go, you've seen that pressure at Home Depot and Lowe's, but both of them are good operators, so they've been able to, you know, more efficiently drop that to the bottom line and drive greater profits from those sales.
And so can we expect that what Target is doing, what Lowe's doing, is just sort of sector-wide, sort of we're going to see retail doing okay, or is it certain companies going to win and certain companies are going to continue to struggle?
Yeah, we think it's a bit of a haves and have-nots world right now, where, you know, some of these larger, high-quality retailers are performing well, like Home Depot and Target and Lowe's and Walmart, and then there's the other end of it, where there's some of those older merchants that haven't kept up with the times and maybe are a little bit behind. You know, you're seeing the department stores give up a lot of market share, and actually companies like Target are taking that market share.
Thanks so much for the insight. That is Joe Feldman, Senior Retail Analyst at Telsey Advisory Group, joining us on the Noon Business Hour. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just rewind to any time you want. We have a brand new pause and rewind function. It works both online and by updating the radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.